The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Let's start with a sitting. So in the last few minutes of this sitting, I'd like to offer you something to contemplate. On one hand there is anger. On the other hand, there is your relationship to anger. Someone might be angry and be afraid of their anger. Someone else be angry and they're embarrassed. Someone might be angry and their relationship to the anger is to believe it. The relationship to anger might be to let the anger define who they are. I'm an angry person. Someone's relationship to anger might be to give it infinite permission. Let it be. Let it rip. Regardless of consequences. So on one hand there's anger, and on the other hand it's the ways we relate to it, the ways we hold it. What are some of the ways that you relate to anger? In different circumstances, are there different ways that you tend to relate to your anger? And then to change the reflection a little bit, there is anger when someone's angry towards you, when you're receiving anger, and then there's your relationship to being the recipient of anger. Some people run away, close down, some people attack. Some people, first instinct is to believe that they've done something wrong. Their first instinct is to defend themselves. So what are some of the ways in which you relate to receiving anger from others? I believe that often enough, when there is anger, when someone's feeling angry, that how they relate to the anger is entangled with the anger. And part of the value of mindfulness, being mindful of anger, is it possible to tease apart the anger in and of itself, and then how we're relating to the anger. So, for example, I like to say that resentment is frozen anger. There's anger, but then somehow it's locked down. So there's a relationship of holding, gripping it, resisting it, something. And for some people, sometimes, the anger is not really the issue or the real place of suffering, but rather the suffering comes from the relationship to anger. So I'd like to hear from some of you. It'd be nice to hear from all of you. It doesn't have to be personal, But it'd be nice to hear a list so we can all kind of expand the possibilities of what we see. What are some of the ways that people, you or others, relate to being angry when you're angry yourself? Yes.
Until recently, I think I was the queen of resentment. And the way I related to anger was to deny that I felt it, pretend it wasn't there, ignore it, run away from it. I don't know. Anything you can imagine, even though I knew the whole time that it was there, I was doing that. And through this practice and some of my experiences in life, I'm learning that I do have anger, that it's normal and it's okay to be angry sometimes. And I'm learning how to create that space between me and my anger. Which is really great when I can do that. It's so liberating. That would be with somebody else. The second question. To learn how to express my feelings, without hostility and to let myself know and maybe the other person know, what's really the issue?
Great, thank you. So that was a great list, but can we add to that list of ways in which people relate to anger?
I have several. Self-judgment is one. Taking it inward and trying to change myself very quickly to adapt to the other person. And then lately I've found a new way that I have to be careful, and I call it the spiritual bypass, where I kind of go, oh, it's just dukkha. But I've realized I need to kind of experience the anger and not just quickly label it dukkha. Mm.
Great. Could you hear that? So she said that I think maybe that bad.
Can you hear it this time?
Yeah, you want to say it again? Or?
Okay, the first one was self-judgment. The second was to immediately try to adapt and change to meet what the other person needs. And the third was spiritual bypass, which is quickly labeling it dukkha, and it can be a way to resist or avoid experiencing the anger. And so I've learned to be cautious about that.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's a tendency I have to deny it on first, when it first happens, and to just go off into a story. And I found that I was doing that during the meditation when you were asking the question. I would, start to ask. I would ask the question. And then all of a sudden I was off somewhere else, looking back at, some story. So it's like, oh God, I do that like so quickly.
So for you, anger is closely connected to story making.
Yes.
You're a good storyteller.
Well, I don't think so.
Saw someone.
I think this relates to anger, but not necessarily. I usually want to fix things. I want them to be better. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how.
So when anger is there, your first instinct is something needs to be fixed and I should fix it.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever that might be, whether it's being conciliatory or... rather than just being with the anger or being with the interaction, I want to fix it. Make it nice, make it okay.
Do you have any sense of what is lost by quickly trying to fix it.
I get the sense that I've sort of missed the full experience of what's happening and what's just what's going on.
Great, thank you.
So are we talking about unskillful ways of dealing with anger?
It could be any.
Well, one unskillful way is that I go to sleep.
Go to sleep.
Yeah. But a skillful way is I stay with the feeling in my body. And I might have to go do that by myself for a while, but if I stay with that feeling, something usually arises that tells me what I'm really, what's really underneath the anger.
Thank you. John?
Something that I heard Sylvia Borstein say a long time ago was, or this is the way I remember it, was that anger is a message that, to you, that there's something that you don't like that is true or is happening, and that to see if you can use anger as an indicator that there's something going on that you're not comfortable with in some way. I sometimes have found that very, very useful way to relate to the anger, probably if it's a lighter sense of anger, and if I can pause and reflect on that, is there something that I'm not accepting or something that's true that, you know, I need to open up to, or something I just don't like going on, and I can just see that, and then it can dispel the anger very quickly. One thing I was thinking sort of formally in Buddhist practice too that I maybe would like to explore more is just noting whether something is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant, unpleasant, and to be able to see this is unpleasant, but that's it. It could be very useful. But then I find sometimes that when I make this inquiry as to what is it that I need to open up to, it actually then just turns into some sort of repression of the anger, self-judgment of it, because there must be something that I'm not opening up to. And you better open up to it. And what's your problem about not opening up to it? And when are we going to finally open up to it? And so it's taking it and becoming very corrosive with it, of course.
So at the beginning you talked about using anger as a signal.
Yes.
That we need to pay attention to this more deeply at something. But then it comes with a bias that if you understand more deeply, it'll go away, and you must be doing something terribly wrong if it's persisting.
Is that? Yeah, I think there can be that, but also the task of trying to find, well, what is it? And it might involve a very complicated storyline or investigation, and it's making it very complex then, and probably reinforcing all of it in some way.
So is it fair to say that for you that if you're investigating anger, there's already a suspicion, a supposition of guilt?
When it doesn't work so well, yeah. And I think in some cases, what Sylvia was pointing to, it's like, wow, yeah, that's unpleasant.
Just unpleasant.
Yeah, it's simple. But yeah, then it becomes all messed up in that. And what you were saying about feeling it in your body, maybe just letting it pass through could be a lot better. But
great, thank you. So Ursula.
I think if anger is directed at me, my first response would be to become defensive and tell myself that other person is wrong. And I have learned that if I look at it, I realize that there's fear underneath that defensiveness, because I think maybe I'm not okay. Maybe they're right and I'm not really okay. And that's unpleasant. And so I try to look a little more deeply nowadays. It scares me to have somebody be angry with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's good to be able to step back and say, okay, what is really going on?
Thank you. Roseanne.
Along with what people have been saying about story and investigation and so on, I think what happens to me a lot of times is that I get very confused about what's really going on. And so I'm not sure, you know, where the other person is coming from. And what I kind of think of as sort of what arises is a co-creation. So it's not just on one side, but it's as a manifestation of something in the relationship that's coming up for both people. And so then I get confused about, well, what's really going on with them or with me, or, you know, what's really happening here. And so, so that's just something I like to recognize now, and sometimes recognizing it and stepping away from it helps to understand or get some clarity on things.
Great. Beautiful. So for you, when there's anger, one of the first assumptions or first things that operates for you is the belief that there must be something here that we're both doing, something in the system. So that's a...
Right. Well, as you said earlier, there's a lot of different kinds of anger, and, you know, it arises in different ways and different things. But sometimes it's really clear, you know, what I might be angry about, and other times it's confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
A lot of times when it's an interpersonal, interrelationship thing, I think it's more confusing because I think the situation is often co-created. It's not just coming from one person.
That's for sure. Thank you. So there's a lot of different relationships we can have to anger. And some of them stem from who we are personally, kind of our personal dispositions or something. And some of them also are learned from others, from society. And sometimes they're kind of crazy producing what comes from society. There are people who have, in a conventional sense at least, certainly cause to be angry. People, society treats certain members of it pretty badly, and underclass of people. And then when people who are being oppressed get angry, then they're told that that's not acceptable. So that's they're doing something wrong. And then perhaps some of you who are women have had that experience, that there's been reasons for women to have been treated pretty badly. And you get angry but you get angry with it, that just proves the fact that you are, you know, something. And so a person in that kind of situation is kind of in a catch-22. You know, something terrible is happening, but if you speak about it, then it's even worse, and then you're to blame. You're told something's wrong with you. So all those things, you know, has to do with how people relate to anger, how you relate to anger, what we internalize, what happens other. So it's a whole world. Yes.
You can see that on an international basis between the Israeli and the Palestinian issues. It's being played out just how one responds to stimulus, how you respond to that and the back and forth. It's just writ large.
Yeah. So I think in order to look at, to practice with and be wise about anger, I think it really helps to look at the relationship we have to anger. How do we tend to respond to it? And that opens up the door to a whole series of different alternative ways. There's a lot of different relationships we could have with it. And I think the idea that anger is a signal is a really wise one, that because that says, oh, it's something for me to learn here. And there's a lot of things possibly to learn. I mean, sometimes you might learn about how you are wrong. You might learn that you're really off, you know, in some kind of way. Or you might learn something about your society, or you might learn something really wise. Or there's a lot of things. There's a whole learning process. And so to be interested in anger in that sense, oh, what is it here? What is it I can learn? Is one whole approach. So the other aspect of anger that needs to kind of, I think it helps the whole exploration and practicing with it, becoming free of it also, so it's not a hindrance, is to understand the anger in and of itself. What is the anger? And I would like to propose here that anger is a composite event. It's made up of many different composite parts. Physical parts, emotional parts, cognitive parts, beliefs, ideas, motivational parts, things that we want to see happen. There's a lot of different things it's made up of. And I would like, partly just maybe to, you know, this is a very important topic, I don't want to belittle it, but also maybe so we don't get too serious here today, I thought we'd have a contest. So what I had in mind was break into groups of maybe seven or eight, probably is a good size for this. And in your group, one person is the recorder. And the person who writes down. And the group tries their best to come up with a list of all the different things that can make up the experience of anger. All the component parts. And, you know, with as much differentiation and subtlety it's, you know, you can do. And then we'll see who has the best list. the most complete list. Something. I will decide who wins.
Is that quality rather than quantity?
Oh, it depends. It's very subjective on my part. There's no real external kind of great. No, it's going to be so subjective. We don't want points. It's just going to be subjective here. So are you game? I think it's very interesting to kind of start understanding some of all the different things that can make it up. And partly I hope through this exercise is it makes you more sensitive in the future to all the things you can explore when you explore and are present for anger.
What's your question again?
So what are the component parts of anger? What are the different things that make up the experience of anger? So what is it like, the experience of it? So what's it like physically? What's it like energetically? What's it like emotionally? What's it like cognitively? What's it like mentally? What's it like motivationally? What kind of intentions come with it? What are all the elements that can come together to create this thing we call anger, or these things we call anger? And only take the idea of a contest seriously enough to lighten the mood. Otherwise, don't get serious about it. Enjoy. So seven or eight is probably a good number of people. One person's the recorder. Okay, so I think we have a quorum. And can one of the recorders volunteer to be first?
Okay, here it goes. Aggression, adrenaline rush, comparing, judging mind. No. Were they alphabetized? So far, so good. Here. Heat and energy, oppression, irritation,
self-judgment, self-protection or self-protective, self-justification, defensive, shame, guilt, hurt, separation, isolation, unlike me, or not being like me, mental assumptions, rationalizing, fault, blame, not liking the anger, aversion to the anger, not liking being seen as angry, unspiritual, a bad Buddhist. Tightness in the chest, racing heart, blood pressure up, powerlessness, tension, rapid breathing, agitation, anxiety, flushing in the face, ignorance, impatience, disappointment, frustration, self-righteous, attachment to outcome, perfectionist, not present, seeing red, narrow focus, clenching jaw or clenching fists, pain, hurt feelings, reaching for comfort food. Contracted, shut down, fight or flight, protectiveness, mother bear, fighting, freezing, tend and befriend, so going to your friends, make it go away, fix it, impatience, fatigue, tired, hungry, vulnerable, competition, spite, hostility, ill will, attacking, disappointment, yelling, spitting, holding breath, stop breathing, tantrum, hiding, withdrawal, suicide, depression, getting even, revenge, retribution, getting rid of the object that's causing the anger, story making, jealousy, confusion, not thinking clearly, irrational, blind rage, annoyance, trembling, tears, clenching gut, stomach ache, power or empowering, strength, energized, shaking, tightness, upset, nervous, biliousness, puffed up, tight, and self-important.
Well, maybe that was a long list. Maybe then other people have can win by quality instead of quantity. Yes. From your group?
Yeah.
Oh, your group only gets one list.
Yeah.
One recorder for each group.
Different.
Oh, different group. Yeah, yeah, for different group. We're ready for different, the next group. Okay, I thought you were in the same group.
No.
Okay.
But it's also a long
time. Okay.
So we split up physical from some of the other emotional, cognitive, and intentionality. That's as far as we got. So, and each list gets shorter. Physical. Furrowed brows. Oh, I have to read my own writing. Stomach tightness. Teeth clenching. Finger clenching, making them into fists. Shallow breathing. Tight chest. Voice tight. Tension overall, especially face. Nausea, vomiting. Quietly, intensely angry. Overall body language. Folded arms. Glaring. Steaming, boiling, voice high and squeaky, shouting, raising voice, terror, destructive, violence. Some of the categories are going to cross. Anger with sexual energy, adrenaline, physical energy, nervous laughter, showing teeth, screaming, speaking very fast, speaking very slowly, speaking very intensely, sarcastic, testy, chip on shoulder, acceleration into a very acute and sharp ability to verbalize. I think that is what we put it under physical. Adrenaline rush, tears, shaking, shaking voice, frothing, heartbeat up, red face, bulging eyes, veins, pumping. Then emotional, fear, fury, frustrated, helpless, powerless, sadness, threatened, feeling misunderstood, feeling angry, sad, sorry I'm not reading this, depressed, feeling a failure, confused, unable to reason, judgmental, isolated, violated, oppressed, exploited, vulnerable, ashamed, guilty, hostile, self-righteous, satisfying, empathizing, no, empowering, hatred, detesting, objectify, rage, fury, vicious, jealousy, vindictive, vengeful, and revenge, compulsion, and sympathizing while feeling all these other things. cognitive, imagining horrible things, storytelling, repeated storytelling, verbalizing, screaming, yelling, victimizing self and others, justifying, rationalizing, fueling with stories, repetition with stories, conniving, plotting, controlling, fantasizing, blaming, can't read my writing, sorry, won't get that one, and acting out, striking, hitting, screaming, shooting, physical violence, shouting, condescending, hurting self or others, suicide, accusing, road rage, alcoholic driving, and intentionality. I want to be seen. I want to be acknowledged. I want to be heard. I want to control, insulting, threatening.
Gee.
Our list had all of those, of course. but we were looking at them, and they did come into different categories: physical, emotional, cognitive, feeling, and we were trying to see how they flow, were triggered and flowed. So first there was an instance where you sense and contact, and generally there's a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, then there's the interpretation, and then there's the action or reaction. So the action or reaction would be the hitting back, the recrimination, just whatever you do for that. And then after that, there is an initial replaying or re-triggering that would continue that anger, or continue the emotion that would, you could, if you were mindful enough, you could choose to pick up or not pick up. And invariably, from that action, there's a rebounding and recrimination that happens from an act of anger. So that's our concise
great
list.
So not just the individual things happening, particularly happening, but also they happen together as a process. That there's a flow, there's an unfolding of them.
There's a individual who mentioned that when anger is triggered, it courses it takes around 90 seconds for it to course through your body from a chemical point of view. So if you can just hang out without re-instigating or involving it, it can pass.
Count to 90.
You don't have to count to 100.
Good. Great. Thank you. So I think we have one more group.
Storytelling. Green helps. Storytelling.
clenched jaw and hands, tight gut, heat, tight face, hot flashes, shock going into heat in the body, judgmentalness that there's judgmentalness or they're wrong, self-righteousness, shoulds, things should be other than they are, fear, increases in energy, decreases in energy, helplessness, embarrassment, resignation, disrespect, rejection, hostility, denial, revenge, reactivity, sarcasm, passive-aggressive, cynicism, adrenaline rush, fantasy, rehearsing and post-hearsing, yelling, icy tone, name-calling, emotional, destroying property. Somebody told a story about a husband putting his car, or the other way around, car. Destroyed property. Factionalizing them versus us. Violence. Pain. Inflammation. Resistance. Cognitive dissonance. Bile. Threatened and feeling threatened. War. Motivation. Boundary protection from boundary invasion. Tension, headache. A positive action was something like the woman who founded Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, because her daughter was killed by a drunk driver. Sadness. Makeup sex. Apathy.
Right.
So it's the couple. Remember the couple that fights and then makes up. Okay. Anxiety. Impatience. Aggressive driving. Punch a wall. Food. Comfort food. Addictions. Craving. Depression. Apathy. And a decrease in energy. That was exhausting.
Great. So I'm sure the list could be longer. No, the one word I didn't hear is suffering. I guess it's so obvious. And so I think that hopefully this exercise is interesting because part of the task of mindfulness is to look more carefully at any experience, but to look more carefully at the experience of anger and begin seeing that there's different elements to it, different parts of it. And once we start seeing different parts of it, we start having a different relationship to it. It becomes a different thing. So one of the things that I do with anger, excuse me, is if I'm angry enough that it's sticking around, I like to go for a walk. And what I like about walking is that the flow of the walking, it kind of keeps me fluid with it. And I just let it kind of be there angry, and I'll think about it, I'll reflect about it, I'll feel it, I'll be present for it. I'll think about the situation, you know, just kind of freely, kind of the free way that sometimes I can, or just go for a walk. And stay with it until I can see what seems to underlie it, what some of the different elements are. And the two underlying elements that I find most common for me is either fear or hurt. And then once I find fear and hurt, then and it becomes a whole different animal, becomes a whole different thing to explore. And I find that it becomes something much more more productive to be present for. It's more useful to be present at the root of it, at the foundation of it, than it is at the branches of it. And anger, I think of anger as branches rather than the root. And once there's some feeling of fear, hurt, then there can be a different motivation. If there's hurt, there can be compassion. And so then the motivation to act can come out of compassion in some way. If there's fear, then the motivation can be protection, or try to solve, you know, protect or make the situation better. And if I'm angry with somebody, then going back to the person, talking while I'm angry, I don't find generally so useful. But for me to go back into the conversation with the person and say, you know, that really frightened me, or I felt hurt, then I feel I often find that's a much more productive way to have a conversation and find our way forward. This is a teasing it apart. Also, the very important part of teasing anger apart is to see the role that the story-making mind has. And as someone, I think, pointed out in the list, you know, this idea of 90 seconds, if you do nothing for 90 seconds, it'll pass. I don't know how long it should pass, how long it takes. But anger is a, in order to continue through time, has to be reactivated over and over again. It isn't like you get angry once and then it just stays there for the rest of the day. It's actually many little movements of anger being reasserted over and over and over again. So what is it that's, how are we reasserting it? How are we reliving it? How are we reactivating it over and over and over again? And one of the primary ways is through the stories to tell ourselves, the ideas, all that. Some of you might have had the experience, I've had the experience of sitting in meditation, minding my own business, you know, being calm and settled and peaceful, and who knows why, but suddenly this thought arises about this event that happened 20 years ago or, you know, or yesterday or something, some point, and then it's like a volcano in there. Well, you know, I didn't know I had so much energy. I was sleepy. And, you know, I'm plugged in now. And there's so much energy kind of that can come from that story, that our story arising. And so if I let go of the story, then that energy has a chance to dissipate. But if I stay rehearsing the story, then we rehearse the feelings. The feelings come up over and over again. And if, in fact, the feelings we're having come a lot from the stories we tell ourselves, they might be accurate stories, doesn't mean that they're inaccurate. What are the choices we're making that keeps us rehearsing the stories, involved in the stories, repeating it over and over again? Is it really the most useful thing to do to continue living that story? This is why I think among some psychologists these days, in the last, I don't know how long, 20 years, the idea of expressing your anger is not as popular as it used to be. And so, like, oh, tell me about your angry. Tell me, show me how angry you are and tell me about it. And it used to be that catharsis and expressing and getting it out there was considered really great. And what people have found is more often than not, it tends to reinforce the very tendency to be angry. It keeps it going and reinforces the idea that it's, you know, the habit of being angry and all that. And so how we tell ourselves a story, what we say, and has a big impact. And because to some degree, or maybe a big degree, when we get angry, it has to do with how we're interpreting or perceiving a particular situation. And so, are there different ways of perceiving it, different ways of interpreting a story? Are there different meanings within which to hold the event? And so that in the different meaning of holding the event, then maybe anger is not going to be elicited. So, you know, if someone you don't know comes along down the street and starts hitting you, you know, with a fist, some people would get afraid. It's reasonable. Some people would perhaps get angry at, you know, what's, I didn't do anything. I was just here in the street and someone's beating me up. What's going on here? And as I said, I think it was last Monday, I was on retreat, teaching retreat once, and this woman came to me and told me of going to the Deep South in 1963 and protesting segregation there, and standing on a street corner, and a demonstration, peaceful demonstration, and these rednecks came along in a pickup truck and jumped out and beat up the demonstrators. And they, because it was nonviolent protesting, they didn't defend themselves. And then they went back to the protesters, came back to the same place the next day, did the same thing. Same thing happened again. They got beat up by the same people. Came back the next day. Some people would think it's foolish to do that a third time, but they came back the next day and stood in the same place. The same rednecks came along. And one of them was standing above her with his fist ready to hit her in the face. And their eyes met, and they looked each other in the eyes. You know, it's a great way to make human connection. And the guy looked at her and said, "What are you doing? What's going on here? How could you do this?" And that was the beginning of a conversation. And the there was no more fighting. They just, rather, there was a discussion about segregation and racism and things like that. So, there's a different meaning. I don't know if she was angry. But there was a different meaning of the situation, the context. It seems very easy to justify anger in that situation. Someone's beating you up. But it's seen in a very different way, for a very different purpose, a very different goal. And so how do we hold it? How do we look at it is a situation. And I think what Buddhism teaches us is that we can be it's helpful to be questioning of the very way in which we see a situation. Don't take it that our first perception or first interpretation is necessarily the most useful one. But how can we be present here and kind of see it in a different way? And part of the classic Buddhist way of working with anger has to do with reframing the understanding of what's going on. Looking at it from a different perspective. And the very question, the very investigation of what are the different elements that make up anger, just that is to look at it from a different perspective. It means we're kind of now not looking at it the usual way, but we're kind of beginning to tease it apart, and then once we start doing that, there's a different relationship to it. So it's a reframing in and of itself. So I'd like to spend the last few minutes talking a little bit about the classic Buddhist approaches to working with anger. But I think maybe it's good to take a short break before we do that. So maybe a 10-minute break would be good, and then we'll come for the closing session. Yeah.